to introduce Dominic Quaggan-Gorham, Senior Counsel. And I remember last year when Dominic achieved her Senior Counselship, if it's called that, I presented her with a bottle of Dom for Dom. 2002. The really sad news, Dom, is it's a dud year. I subsequently discovered.
We didn't notice when we drank it.
No, that's quite all right. But my mate Fred, the wine expert, came to dinner and I opened another bottle of the Dom 2002 and we had a glass and it really didn't show up very well. And he said, well, perhaps you should put the cork back in and have it tomorrow night and we'll move on to something else. But Fred's very particular about his wines, which is not what I was actually going to talk about, but nevertheless, I was actually going to say it's a very great pleasure to have Dom, who's achieving great success in her baristing career, as I call it. And I recall the first time I met Dom, I think it was the first time, was at an event put on by Women Lawyers. And Dom was pregnant with her third child. So how long ago was that, Dom?
It would have been early 2001.
Yeah, that's quite some time ago. So I've
actually... Depending on how big I want, it could be late 2001.
So Dom has actually, in a funny sort of way, achieved it all. Three charming children. I assume they're charming. All children are charming, aren't they? Yes? Yeah. Three charming children. And huge success at the bar. Well, she's terribly well regarded for her skills. So this evening we are very privileged to have her speaking with us, to us. Dom's been a WOB member for eons. Thank you, Dom. I think so. I think since the beginning. Yeah. And Dom's a fabulous speaker. She's got an hopefully entertaining presentation. If a little challenging, because I have a look at it. So there's no freebies at the director's circle. So with that, I have great pleasure in introducing Dominic Quaggan-Gorham, Senior Counsel.
Right. I wasn't sure whether they would have the PowerPoint organised, so I did make copies for everybody, and given... if everyone's eyesight is as good as mine, you will be referring to the printed document and not to the... just moving this here. I should just do like a Dale and walk around and see if I'll be better than her.
I do have a
headset.
Do you have a clip on if you want?
No, it's okay. I'll be all right. All right. I do feel like I'm going to sort of burst into song at some point. Just to sort of set a context, so as Ruth was saying, I have been associated with Women on Boards since the beginning, because I was first on the National Foundation of Australian Women's Board with Ruth in about 2003, and I think that's about the time that Women on Boards was being put together or established. I'm sort of nodding yes. But my own experience as a director in that sort of last 10 years. I mean, I've been at the bar for 21 years this year. I went when I was very young, age of 21. But I've been a director of private companies and not-for-profits and foundations for about, on and off, for about 10 years. But just in the last 2 years, I became a director of an industry super fund, and I'm up the back ready to heckle me. I'm the former chair of that fund, Janet Tawney, but I must say that in the last 18 months, my experience being on that board has just really opened my eyes to the real dilemmas and rigour that is required as a director, but also how well-intentioned people are. And one of the ways of being sort of fulfilling that intention is to be informed. And that isn't just from coming along and doing, you know, AICD courses or listening to someone like me giving a CPD or, you know, a CLE, but it's about engaging with each other and learning from each other. And one of the great things about these Directors' Circle events is that really at the end of the evening, hopefully you'll have learned a lot less from me and a lot more from those around the table with you. And I do encourage you to sort of move around. You won't believe the amount of food that's going to come So there will be an opportunity to have a break, and there will be an opportunity to discuss things. And I'm going to be asking questions and asking you to ask each other questions, because I think the thing about being a director, I have found, it's not about anything that's in a book. It's about the lived experience. And one of the reasons, and I look around the room, one of the reasons conflicts of interest is a difficult issue to deal with is that often you're on the board because you bring such great experience, you bring skills, and that means you're going to have good connections, you're going to have good connections in the community, family, business experience, you're probably well regarded, and therefore maybe are serving on a number of boards, hoping to join other boards. And so all of those things put you into positions where probably a lot of the time you're going to have difficult questions of conflict of interest coming at you, not just when you join, but throughout your time as a director and as you consider other opportunities. And the great thing about women on boards is they're constantly sending you emails telling you about the new opportunities that there are. Am I doing well with plugging the organisation tonight? And one of the things you look at that, you say, well, is this something that I could do? Is that going to conflict with this other obligation that I have? So that's the context for this tonight. And I look around the room and I also want to acknowledge Lindy Hunt, who has made my life on this board so much easier, because she's our head of legal. So instead of them all turning to me and asking me their legal advice, I go, hey Lindy, what do you think? Okay, now, since everyone's happy, I'll now deal with ASIC. What I wanted to mention to you is this week ASIC announced in its recent report, ASIC releases every 6 months enforcement outcomes updates, where it tells all the stories of the successes or otherwise that it has had in bringing proceedings against directors and companies over the last 6 months, and it sets out all its stats, it sets out, you know, what are the learnings, and they're actually very useful reports to have a look at. But one of the things that do is they identify what are their enforcement priorities. And for some time you'll see that ASIC has been talking about corporate culture. And I gave a talk which, if you go on my site, you can find it. It was a law talk, so it was for the Centre for Law, Markets and Regulation last week. But what you will see is that there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not you know, pursuing or seeking to take enforcement action in relation to poor corporate culture sounds a bit, how does that really work? Right. But at the end of the day, one of the themes I want to develop tonight, and it's one of the ways to approach the questions, is approaching questions with intellectual honesty. Right. Asking yourself, being rigorous in asking yourself a series of questions and having those around you asking themselves and answering and having a system of consideration and disclosure. And that might be on a whole range of issues. It might be on risk, it might be on strategy, it might be on in particular subject matters or subject areas of the organisation, be it OH&S and so on. But that is part of, and what has happened is that ASIC has tried to articulate a little bit more what they mean by poor corporate culture by adding in this new one, which is poor governance and management systems. Now, they're particularly focused in about poor governance and management systems resulting in the market not being properly informed. So those are very much in the public listed company sector, where information is not coming up. Often financial operating information isn't coming up to the board, isn't being reported up, and isn't being announced to market in a timely fashion. But I wanted to raise that with you, a number of other ones, and you can see where ASIC is seeking to focus its activities. Now, having said that, against that is the Australian Company Directors messaging. I had the great fortune to do the AICD Directors course for a second time this last summer. Now, the first time I did it was about 12 years ago, and I'm probably nothing anyway, so it's just as well I've done it for a second time. But when I did it, I was just really struck by how different the questions were to the kind of questions lawyers think about. And the message that was being sent about was the responsibility of directors to ensuring that risk and legal exposure is identified, managed and monitored. Now, that's all about the system around you. The questions tonight are about you and how you relate to the context and the system around you. Now, this is not a law lecture, but since we're at different levels of expertise and experience, I'm just recapping. Now, essentially, the issues that you raise with conflicts of interest arises from your role as a director is a role in which you are a fiduciary. You owe fiduciary obligations to the company or the entity in which you are an appointee. Right? Now, when I mention duties of being fiduciaries being something recognised in equity, that's the historic courts of chancery in England, and that's essentially where all of this law has developed from. And it develops because in a context of operating on the conscience of the individual. Right? How does that person relate to what is that somebody else or some other entity repose trust and confidence in them? If that is the nature of the relationship, then there is a strict duty to, for example, defer to their interests. And the best example in this room of that is that relationship between trustee and beneficiary, where you must give priority to the interests of beneficiaries. The common law, though, it's not to be forgotten. So you'll know, you'll see that come up all the time. So the rules on you can't misappropriate the company's property, you can't misuse your position in order to take advantage of an opportunity and then derive a profit from it if you haven't got fully informed consent. Right? All of those come from the world of equity, the world of chancery. But there are other overlays. So for example, when you're appointed to a board, you'll have a letter of appointment, right? Or you might have been voted on, you know, at a meeting, a general meeting, or you may have been co-opted on by the board. Whatever be the mechanism, your appointment is a contract between you and the company. So the letter of appointment may have terms, right, which apply to you and apply to the relationship that you have. So you also have contractual duties. Now, there's also a contractual relationship between members, between shareholders, for example, in a proprietary company or in a public company. And if you think about what are now called the Constitution, but was in the old days the Memorandum and the Articles of Association, they operate as a statutory contract between members. And breach of that contract has ramifications. And so the statute sections are essentially the statutory emanation of what was already, now it doesn't purely codify the common law and equity, but it either identifies or extends it in oh so many ways. So, as I said, these are here for reference, but we're going to come back a few times about how these come out and how they play out in your thinking in the framework that you need to establish in asking yourself questions. The Corporations Act you will all well know. This, I'm sorry to say, is not a detailed address on sections 181, 182, 183, 191, 195. If you want to know more about that, you can either read a book or pay me for the advice.
Attention, the emergency warning system. Please disregard all tones. I say again, please disregard all tones. Thank you.
That
put me in my place.
Alright, we'll come back to those regimes shortly. But let me just mention one thing. There's a couple of people here tonight who I think may have been or are now on public boards. Maybe on the board of a state-owned enterprise, for example, or maybe on the board of an organisation that actually came into being by incorporation under a statute. For example, the RSL is incorporated in that way. And so when we talk about its constitution, it may have its own, for example, its own separate constitution, but it's essentially its constituent document begins with the Act of Parliament. So it's worth considering, and we'll come back to all the sort of regimes that are proliferating. Some of you may have the unhappy task of having been on an owner's corporation committee. And then, so now in the new strata management regime, directors' duties apply to the participants on those organisations. If you're a director of a company title building, director's duties apply to you because it's a company that's incorporated under the Corporations Act, or actually usually they're incorporated under the 1936 Companies Act, and the memorandum and association are just as archaic and having come up to speed. Anyway, we'll talk about more of those later. The three rules, and we're going to see some examples coming up soon, and we'll start talking after you've had a bit more nibbles. The no conflicts rule is essentially that. We'll see some examples in a moment. Director having to avoid a personal interest or engagement is inconsistent with the best interest of the organisation. Now, in this preparing these slides, I've tried to just use the word organisation to capture the different kinds of entities. But in a moment we'll see that you do need to think with quite some particularity as to what is the entity which I'm a director or officer, because it will send you into or point you into the direction of what's the applicable law, whether there's any applicable guides or codes of conduct that graft onto or give some explanation in the context to your duties.